Well, thank you very much. It's a great, great privilege to be here. Just a lot of memories. My ministry started up here in the Tri-Cities back in 1978, and we launched it out of Richland, Washington, and we went down south. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful run. I was telling John, he picked me up at the airport, I'd like to have a $5 bill for every time I have flown in and out of SeaTac. Unbelievable time. So been a great. The guy that I was brought up here to manage his foundation, and he owned a commuter airlines, Columbia Pacific, and then it was Execuair, and then it was Cascade, and then they sold it to Horizon. That was Jerry Smith. He owned all that, and so I had flight privileges, which is a little spoiled. And he brought me over one day to SeaTac and introduced me to the Alaska Airlines people at the counter and some of the executives. And so anytime I'd fly from Pasco to Seattle to fly somewhere else in the country, I would always go to Alaska. And I'd go to the counter and they would recognize me, and if there was a seat, they'd bump me up to first class. That's being spoiled, let me tell you. So it was a great, great privilege. And a couple months ago, John MacArthur brought me a National Geographic map of the United States, the 50 states. And he said, I want you to put a red dot next to every airport you have flown into in the 50 states to minister. I said, I think I can do that. 348 different airports. And so I told John, we picked him, I said, I'm flown out. I don't care if I get on another airplane. But I was scheduled on the flight that hit the South Tower in 911. And with Jim Stewart, remember Jim, John? Jim Stewart, graduate of the seminary? Anyway, he was pastoring at Cape Cod. So we scheduled meetings, and Monday night I was supposed to do a leadership seminar, and then Tuesday morning they were going to take me to Logan, Boston, to fly out. And that was that 8:30 flight to L.A. And 2 months before, he called me and canceled it. He was having some issues in his church, so he wanted to postpone it for a year. So Wednesday morning he calls me and he said, Jim. I said, yeah, I know. Believe me, I know. So those kind of things you don't forget. So, but I love the Northwest. People ask me all the time, you've been in all 50 states, and what is your favorite part of the country? And I told John this morning, draw a line from Chicago to Detroit and go north. I love northern Michigan. Number two would be the Northwest. I love Southern California, but mainly because of the college and seminary and Grace Church and my relationship with John and all that. But this I love. I tell people, you go in that Space Needle on a clear day, there can't be a more beautiful city in the country than Seattle. I mean, you see, you know, St. Helens and, well, you know, Mount Rainier. And my family and I were speaking in Seattle here when the volcano hit. And we got caught in it going home back to Richland into the dust, into the ash. And so anyway, that was, what, May of 1980, I think it was, right? Yeah. So, yeah, lots of memories, lots of memories. Well, thank you. Like John said, thank you for coming. I'll get this moving and won't keep you too long, you know, maybe an hour and a half, maybe up to 2 hours, depending on the Q&A we do and all that. But don't hesitate to ask questions. If something is said that you want to question more, be, you know, you're welcome. I have a right to be wrong. So, you know, just want to make a comment about the election. Everybody got caught up in that. Probably the most contentious election that I've experienced in my lifetime. I think the Lord spared America. I just really do. I know there's a lot of disagreements out there, and I understand that. But I think economically, financially, this country needs a Donald Trump right now. We're in trouble. We are in trouble. We'll be $20+ trillion in debt by the time this administration leaves office. That is horrendous. And the Federal Reserve has controlled the economy for the last 20 years. Especially since the last 7 years, they have controlled the interest rates, and they need to take their hands off that and let them float to normal levels. What happens if the interest rates float to realistic levels, like 6%, 7%, 8%, and now we're paying 6%, 7% on $21 trillion of debt? What's that going to do to the budget? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Are we facing Armageddon? I don't know. I really don't know. It's not a good picture, and we needed someone with some sense, some business sense, to take hold of this thing and try to fix it. Whether he can or not, nobody knows. But someone who's not tied to lobbyists, someone who's not bought, not owned, that can make decisions. And now that he's got both houses, he's got a lot of power. It'll be interesting to see what he does with it. If he doesn't handle it right, throw him out. Right? But just remember one thing. God is sovereign. God is in control. God has a purpose for everything. God knew 100 years ago who was going to be elected president in 2016. He just didn't seem fit to tell us. So you just have to leave it there. Do I worry about all this? No. No. I read it. I study it. I teach it. I probably understand it as much as anybody in this room. Do I worry about it? No. Do I lose sleep on it? Not a minute. Not a minute. Not a minute. Am I concerned? Sure. Sure. Nothing wrong with being concerned. But worry, that's a sin. My God is in control. He's sovereign. And we can't forget that. We can't forget that. So with that, I want to take you through this. My dad was the superintendent of the largest die casting company in the world back in the 1940s, 50s, and early 60s. And it was located in Toledo. Some of you will remember automobile parts back in those days were made of die cast, zinc and aluminum die cast. It wasn't until the 70s that they turned to plastics. Now the cars are all plastics. That wasn't the case back in those days. Your bumpers, your moldings, your windows, all that was die-cast. And my dad was in charge of that plant, about 20,000 employees. It was huge. May of my senior year in high school, he suffered a heart attack and had to retire. So the company assumed that I probably wouldn't be able to go to college because of his disability. So they gave me a job in purchasing at the plant. So I went to work in purchasing in the fall of 1960, and they gave me the responsibility of the rear windows for the Lincoln Continental and the Ford Thunderbird. My job was to buy the component parts for those rear windows and then get it shipped up to the River Rouge plant in Detroit to put in the cars. 1964, they gave me the Ford Mustang. The most sold car in the history of the automotive is the Ford Mustang. Still holds the record. That's where I cut my teeth on the financial side. You probably heard the name Leah Iacocca. Iacocca was the brainchild behind the Ford Mustang. He saved Chrysler, if you remember, back in those days. Just before the Mustang came out, it was going to come out as the Cougar. And about 3 months before production, he changed it to the Mustang because he thought the name Mustang would have a better drawing appeal to the younger generation. So we had to run around and change the tooling for the windows to a Mustang, from a lion to a horse. And then the Cougar came out later. So anyway, and while I had that responsibility, I was going to night school, University of Toledo, getting my degree in accounting and finance, and I took a course in income tax. And I fell in love with income tax. Now, you have to have a screw loose to fall in love with income tax. You're thinking it, right? I started doing income tax returns for my buddies. And I think it was 1966, my pastor asked me if I would do his return. I didn't know how to do it. I had never seen a pastor's tax return before, totally different than us lay people. And so I had to search the regs. There were no written materials back in those days. And so figured out how to do it. And he was a conference speaker in the Midwest. He would speak at multitude of pastors' conferences. And that dude, I did his taxes for a couple of years, and he'd do these pastors' conferences. And at the end of his session, he would say to these guys, "Now I have a gift for you. I have a guy in my church who will do your tax returns free of charge." I could have killed the rascal. And that's what launched this thing. And then in 1968, I went down to Cedarville, taught in the business department, and finished my degree, and then worked as assistant business manager. Then in 1974, the Lord called us out here, then the Los Angeles Baptist College, now the Masters College and Seminary. And I was the vice chairman of the board when John Duncan, the president, retired. And we went on a search. I was chairman of the search committee, and the Lord led us to MacArthur. And that's when I first met John, was in the December of 1984. It was a three-hour interview with him, which is not true. He talked for 3 hours, nonstop. It was a graduate course in theology. And when he got done, there was no question on who we should call as the next president. And so John and I developed a relationship. And then in 1987, he asked me if I would move my ministry down there and travel with him and do the Shepherd Seminar Series, which we did together for about 6 years. And you remember that, John. And my ministry is independent. It's a foundation, Stewardship Services Foundation. But in our hub, Mark Ruhman worked for us. How many years, Mark? 3 years? Well, you were a student at the college. Great employee. Great employee. Offered him a full-time job. But I only could pay him $1,000 a month. He couldn't raise his family on that. But he was a great employee. It really was a big help to us. So, yeah, it's been great. It's been a great run. And so out of the tax ministry comes the request for the family finance seminars and leadership seminars and estate planning. And tomorrow morning, I'll preach a message from Matthew 6, the three convictions for biblical stewardship, generosity, contentment, and integrity. Then we'll have a potluck, and I'll do the Sunday school, and we'll do a Q&A in Sunday school. And then after the potluck, we'll do the estate planning seminar. Why is a living trust so important today? We'll explain that all to you. There'll be a handout for you, and it won't last long. The seminar after the potluck will probably last maybe 35 minutes is all. Then we'll do some Q&A, so we'll get you in and out of there really quick. But I think you'd really appreciate it. Guardianship issue, that's huge today. You grandparents, you got kids, you got grandkids. The guardianship issue, there's been some court cases. You need to be aware of what's going on in that arena. So we'll talk about that tomorrow afternoon. So take your Bibles if you brought them. If not, that's fine. And turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And we're going to read down through 3:16 down to chapter 4, verse 2. 1 Corinthians 3:16 to chapter 4, verse 2. Do you not know that you are the temple of God and the Spirit of God dwells in you? When you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, you realize He encompasses your very being. And you realize by the grace of God what we have and what we are is because of Him. If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. Some translations say God will bring him to a place of ruin. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. Let no one deceive himself. We live in an unbelievable generation of deception. Folks, we're lied to every day by the news media. That came out clear in this last election. By the newspapers. We are. We're deceived every day. We deceive ourselves in how we handle money. How we rationalize spending money that we probably shouldn't be spending. And I'm talking to me too. So it goes for all of us. Let no one deceive himself. Anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God, for it is written, He catches the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are futile. Therefore, let no one boast in men. Be very careful who you put on pedestals. I'm a diehard Michigan football fan. We love the Seattle Seahawks, as we lived up here. Those football players are not heroes. They're not heroes. They're celebrities. They've been given a gift, and because of that gift, they make a lot of money, and most of them are pagans. And because of that stature, they're looked upon with men with wisdom. Come on. They're immature kids. People we admire should be people who love Jesus Christ, live His principles, teach His principles. Those are the real celebrities. For all things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, Peter, or the world or life or death or things present or things to come, all are yours. And you are Christ and Christ is God's. That's a precious two verses. Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Then verse 2 is the key verse for this morning. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. Now the Greek word for steward is manager. The Greek word for faithful is trustworthy. So you can read that second verse. Moreover, it is required in managers that one be found trustworthy. We are to be trustworthy managers of all that's contained in this book. From Genesis to Revelation, and money is a big part of that. Folks, there are 2,350 verses in the Bible about money and material possessions. 2,350 verses. So there's more said about money in the Bible than heaven and hell combined. So obviously God in His infinite wisdom knew we were going to need a lot of help. And it's here. Flip back to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. This focuses in on the seriousness of the subject. Luke chapter 16 verses 10 and 11. Luke 16, 10 and 11. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous money,
Who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? If you've not, what he's saying here is, if you've not been faithful, and if you're unrighteous in the handling of money, how can I trust you with the souls and the welfare of those that Jesus Christ loves? Whoa. That's very serious. Very serious and to the point. Okay, take your handouts. My dad had a very good job, as I already told you, made a very good wage, and he spent it all. I grew up in a nice home in Toledo, nice situation. My dad would get paid once a month. He'd come home at the end of the month and give my mother the paycheck. I'm probably 9, 10, 11 years old. And back in those days, you didn't have credit cards. You had charge accounts, and every store had its own charge account. And I can remember my mother hauling me downtown, Toledo, and opening a charge account at a store. And they would give her a little plate size of 2 postage stamps, put it in a little leather pouch with the name of the store on the leather pouch. She put it in her purse, and once in a while I peek into her purse, and her purse was loaded with these little pouches. She had a line of credit or a credit charge account probably with every store in Toledo and within 100-mile radius of Toledo. And I began to realize she owed a lot of them money. She'd sit down at the end of the month, lay out the bills, and I'd sit and watch her do this. And she said, I'll pay this one $5, I'll pay this one $10, I paid this one some last month, I'm not going to give them any money this month. And she'd go through that exercise. Then every once in a while, she'd break down and begin to weep. Now, I'm probably 9, 10 years old, and watching my mother weep because she can't pay the bills. And I'm starting to think, what in the world is going on here? Now I'm 12 years old. My cousin Dorothy graduates from Moody Bible Institute and felt called to Costa Rica as a missionary. Was there for probably 60 years and just retired, living in Florida. And I can remember my mom and dad sitting around that table that month and discussing how much they could afford to support Dorothy for. Their favorite niece, my favorite cousin, they came to the conclusion they couldn't afford to support Dorothy. My mom was shocked by that revelation. I can remember her breaking down, starting to cry. Gets up off the table, goes into her bedroom. I could hear her crying in there. I get off my chair and I walk in the living room. I'm thinking to myself, something's not right here. I don't understand this. My dad has a good job. He takes the month of July off every year, and our family goes to Canada to fish. He gets a new car every 2 years. We live in a beautiful home. Mom and Dad can't support Dorothy? I don't get it. I can remember thinking to myself as though it was yesterday, I'm not going to live like this. Fast forward. My wife and I become engaged. We're engaged for a year and a half. I said to her one day, I said, honey, I said, I'm not going to live like that. We're going to put a financial plan together for our marriage. So we sat down for a year and a half, off and on, and we talked about all the issues that would affect our family and our marriage financially. We're going to be generous. We're going to be given to the church. We're going to have a budget. What kind of cars are we going to drive? We're not cars that massage our ego, cars that meet needs. I was in the automotive industry. And we just laid all that out. Those are the principles we've lived by, folks, for 53 years. And I want to tell you, I've had a beautiful marriage. Yes, we both know Jesus Christ. That's a given. But we live the principles that I teach. If we didn't live them, I would have no business standing up here and teaching it. So what you're going to get a dose of all those principles that I've been teaching for over 40 years that I think are really important, especially today in this economy. Folks, we're facing some challenges. We're facing some challenges. 2 years ago, California had a 4% increase in income tax, state of California. The top bracket went from 9.6 to 13.6. It was voted on by the legislature in Sacramento. I didn't vote on that. No California resident voted on that. That was mandated. Folks, you're going to see inflation. We got $20, $21 trillion of debt in this country. We got a couple $1 trillion of stimulus money running through our system. I've taught economics at the college level. The old adage, when you got too much money chasing too few goods, that creates inflation. We've got too much money chasing too few goods. We're going to see inflation. It's been artificially controlled by the Federal Reserve. You're going to see an increase in interest rates. That $21 trillion has got to be paid back. It's got to be paid back. The average discretionary income of Americans in this country is about 75%. 25% of our income goes to pay taxes. Well, you say, I pay more than that in taxes. Got to remember, 51% of our country pay no taxes. Zero taxes. Averages out about 25%. So if my discretionary income is 75% that I can use any way I want, that's going to begin to shrink. Because we're going to see some inflation, and we're going to see some increases in income taxes. The question that everybody in this room needs to be asking, including yours truly, if my discretionary income is going to begin to shrink a bit, how am I going to be able to continue to support my family, to support my church, to support missionaries, Christian schools? I'll tell you how. We all need to get back to the basics of the Word of God. How we live, how we make choices, how we make decisions, and how we manage our resources. So that's what this is all about. Okay, take your handouts. First page here, importance of biblical stewardship. Today, people are driven by materialism. Money controls. Desire to acquire becomes the whole goal of their lives. This drive to always want more is based on the misconceptions that having more will make me happier, more important, and more secure. That is false. It's temporary happiness. I call it the emotional happiness treadmill. Boredom sets in, and then you want bigger houses, nicer cars, more luxury, and the cycle repeats itself. This is a six-part series for biblical stewardship, which I believe, after salvation, is the most important issue we face, that if handled right, allows us the freedom to serve the Lord without the constraints that faces many in our culture. Matthew 6:21, where I put my money is where my heart is, becomes key for this discussion. These are principles my wife and I have lived since 1963. I trust they will be as helpful to you as they have been to us. Page 2. 9 steps to financial freedom. 9 steps to financial freedom. Number 1, we are to be found faithful stewards. 1 Corinthians 4:1-2. We just read that. 2, surrender daily all decisions, problems, and successes. Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And lean on my own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall what? Direct our paths. Be willing to accept God's direction. When you ask God for peace in your heart, when you ask God for direction, be willing to accept that direction. If you don't have peace about a decision you've made, walk away from it. The decision's right today, it'll be right next week or next month. Don't be pressured into something you're not ready to do or don't understand. 9 key financial principles. Give to God first. We'll cover this Sunday morning. 1 Corinthians 16:2. Biblical stewardship starts with generosity. The cornerstone principle for financial stewardship is generosity. It's not how much I have, it's how generous I am with what I have. And when my passion is to be generous, that dictates what I do with the rest of the money the rest of the month. Because my passion is to be generous with what God has given me. Number 2, learn to be a saver. Proverbs 13:11. Dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. That's the NIV. You get paid, give some to the Lord's work. Next, give some to yourself. Put it aside. Build your emergency fund. Plan for retirement. Plan for that trip. When you do 1 and 2, it'll dictate what you do with the rest of the money the rest of the month. Number 3, learn to spend less than you earn. Proverbs 21:20. The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets. That's a paraphrase. Learn to spend less than you earn. For a long, long time, we're not taught that in this culture. We're not taught that by our government. You know, when my wife got married and I got married, we set a budget. We set a cash flow statement. This was our expenditures. This was our income. We focused on building this buffer between income and outgo. And our goal was to grow it. I remember we rented an apartment, 1963, for $75 a month. I can't pay my water bill for $75 a month today. But we focused on this positive cash flow. I got a raise, kept the same standard of living. Got a second raise, kept the same standard of living. We're building this buffer. Got a third raise, we bumped ourselves a little bit. We moved to a $125 a month apartment. That's how you do that. Most people in this country live like this. They fund their lifestyle with credit cards. Unbelievable. Number 4. That's Proverbs 21:20. Number 4, have cash emergency fund. Proverbs 21:20 again. Our financial plan said 50% of what we received in cash wedding gifts was going to seed our emergency fund. That was our financial plan. We got $1,000 in cash wedding gifts. $1,000 in 1963 is a lot of money. $1,000 cash is a lot of money today. We took $500 and we put it in a savings account to seed our emergency fund. And our agreement was we don't touch it unless we both agree it's a legitimate emergency. And our goal was to grow it. We wanted to get it to $1,000 and $1,500 and $2,500. That's how we did that. We took the other $500 and spent it on our honeymoon. 1963, a $500 honeymoon was a nice honeymoon. Today it wouldn't get you out of Seattle or Marysville. Not very far anyway. Number five, don't finance pleasure items. What good verse of scripture, good old-fashioned common sense. Part of our financial plan is we're not going to borrow money to have fun. Folks, I lived up here. I love to hunt. I love to fish. Been on some great trips. Never borrowed money to do any of that. If we didn't have it, we didn't do it. Very simple. Did I use credit cards? Sure. Sure we use credit cards to fund our cash between paychecks. But that credit card never came out of our wallet unless we knew we could pay the bill when we got the bill. Never paid a dime of interest on a credit card. Come on. Come on. That's foreign to most people today, not paying interest on credit card debt. Number six.
Tim,
yes?
You got a recommended percentage on that emergency fund?
Yeah, I would say start with 3 months of your income and bill it to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months of income should be in a savings account. If you can do more, that's even better. But that's going above that's hard for a lot of people. Yeah. If I have money in an emergency fund, and we all have emergencies, I don't have to put it on a credit card to take care of the emergency. I borrow it from myself and pay myself back. That's just good old-fashioned common sense. Number six, protect the family with adequate life insurance, 1 Timothy 5:8. Protect the family with adequate life insurance. Life insurance is an important feature. Listen, people, God gave me that wife. God gave me those kids. I had a biblical, when those kids were under my roof, I had a biblical responsibility to support that family if God called me into His presence prematurely. That's what life insurance does. And I was a term man. I mean, we had Pam. I was 24 years old. Our first child was Pam, daughter. I went out immediately and bought a $500,000 10-level term life insurance policy, age 24 to 34. 10-level term means the premium stays the same and the coverage stays the same for 10 years. You can go as high as 40-level term today. 10-level term, that's what our budget called for. I discovered, as a 24-year-old, the older I get, the more expensive my premiums will be. The longer they protect me, the more it's going to be. If I bought a 20-level term, it'd be more expensive than a 10-level term. Then I also discovered that the biggest increase in premiums are on the decade of my birthday. So when I turn 30, the premium increase is going to be greater than when I turn 29. So when I turned 29, I renewed my life insurance. And I went to a 20-level. More expensive. But I could afford it. You know why? Because of the buffer. The buffer allowed us to do that. So I went from 29 to 49. Then I went from 39, I renewed it at 39, to 59. Then I went from 49 to 69. Then I went from 59 to 75. Because I determined that I didn't need life insurance after I'm 75. Become self-insured. Home is paid for, cars are paid for, pension plan is funded. I don't need life insurance. That's how I did it. I'm 74. I turn 75 next month. Well, 2 months. January. I don't have any life insurance after that. Don't need it. That's how you plan that. That's how you do that. And basically, I'm a term man. I look for something that would protect my family for the cheapest premium. There's whole life insurance. You can buy whole life. It stays permanent. And it grows cash values because it costs you a lot more than term insurance. I took the difference and put it in my retirement plan. That's how I did that. Number seven, have a retirement plan in progress by the time you're 40 years of age. That's Proverbs 13:16. Paraphrase says, a wise man thinks ahead, a fool doesn't, and even brags about it. All right, flip back to pages 14 and 15. Flip back to 14 and 15. Talk about this retirement planning. Listen to me. A lot of people in this country work for corporations that have matching pension plans. If you put in 6% of your salary, they'll match up to 6% of your salary. 62% of the people in this country who work for companies that have matching pension plans don't participate. Don't participate. I have a friend that works with IBM. He's in HR, human resources. He does seminars to IBM employees on their fringe benefits. One of their fringe benefits is a pension plan, matching pension plan. 39% take advantage of it. 61% do not. I get a call during tax season. I get it almost every tax season. Pastor will say, call Jim, ask him that. So I got this call last year. Guy from IBM. He says, Jim, I work for IBM. If I put 6% of my salary in their 401k pension plan, they'll match it. And he pauses. He said, do you think that's a good deal? I said, nah, that's terrible. Why would you want to double your money for nothing? That's an incredible question. I told the guy, I said, sir, I said, your elevator doesn't go to the top floor. You're at least a few quarts short, a few fries short of a Happy Meal. All right, look at page 14. Less than half of those eligible participate in employees' pension plan. Less than 40% of all eligible employees participate in any pension plan. In changing jobs, more than 40% cash out their pension plans rather than roll them over into an IRA or another plan. They cash them out. And if they're under 59 and a half, they pay a 10% federal penalty. If you're in California, you pay a 2.5% penalty to the state. Plus, you pay income tax at your tax bracket. You could easily give over 50% of your money to the government. Unbelievable. It's funding lifestyle. It's what it is. The reasons? Lack of financial discipline. I don't have enough money, they say. I'll never retire anyway. What happens if you lose your health? Retirement is a long way off. I am 75, almost 75, I'm 74. 24 seemed like yesterday. Right, folks? Right? Yeah, it goes that fast. Number five, they have too much credit card debt. Key ingredients for retirement planning, a job obviously allows you to put money away. Number two, participating in Social Security. Number three, starting your pension plan early. Number four, having your home paid for by retirement. Now, go to page 15. This is how you project your retirement income. I call it the 80% rule. You want 80% of your income when you retire. You want 80% of what you're making today when you retire. How do you do that? Start with Social Security benefits. This guy makes $50,000 a year, and I know that's not adequate here, but I'm all over the country. So this guy needs $40,000 in this example when he retires, $40,000 a year of income. How does he get that? Start with Social Security. Listen to me. Don't believe everything the talking hairdos tell you on television. That's all they are, is talking hairdos. Social Security will be here. Why will it be here? It has to be here. There are around 45 million senior citizens in this country under Social Security benefits. Think about the consequences if our government stops sending out those checks. Who do we owe money to as a country? $1.5 trillion to China. $1.4 trillion to Japan. We owe over $500 billion to Russia. We didn't owe Russia a dime before this administration took office. What would they say? You can't take care of your senior citizens? Why would we think we're going to get our money back? They demand the return of that money, and we couldn't pay that money. You would see a global depression. Not a recession. You would see a depression. That will not happen. If that happens, we're gone financially. They'll fix it. They don't have a choice. And that's one thing I'm excited about this new president. I think he'll fix those things. I really do. I may be disappointed. But I think he will. He's either a big talker or a doer. Someone said, made a comment to me the other day, it was a Bob Provost. He said, you know something about Trump? It's interesting. He said, he's got such an ego, he won't fail. He's got such a strong ego, he won't fail. That's an interesting statement. That's an interesting statement. So Social Security will be here. Folks, actuarial studies say 74% of the Social Security paid out pretty well guaranteed through most of this century. It's a 26% problem. When Roosevelt instituted Social Security in the 1930s, the average lifespan was 58 years of age. Today, it's 78 years of age. That's not how the system was built. So more money's going on than it's coming in. So how do you fix it? You extend the retirement age. You're not going to get it at 66 or 67. You're not going to get it until you're 70, full retirement. That would do wonders for this thing. You means test it. Donald Trump doesn't need Social Security benefits. He's a multi-quadruple millionaire, whatever. He doesn't need Social Security. Now you've got to figure out what you do for him because he did pay into it. There's another issue. Do you realize that the upper income only pay Social Security tax on the first $118,000 of their income every year? Medicare tax you pay no matter how much you make. If you make $1 million a year, you pay Medicare tax on $1 million, not Social Security. 6.2% plus the match from your corporation, which is now 12.4% total, stops at $118,000. Take the lid off. Take the lid off. Do the same thing to Social Security they've done to Medicare. That would do wonders for the system. Wonders for the system. It's fixable. It's fixable. Okay, back to page 15. Let's say you're going to get $21,600 from Social Security benefits. It's probably a little low. Line 5, you need another $18,400 of income a year to meet your goal of $40,000. Take $18,400 divided by 0.05%. 0.05% and 18.4 is $368,000. You need $368,000 in a retirement plan generating 5% a year, which generates $18,400 to meet your goal of $40,000. Now, you won't get that today, but over your lifetime, you should, all right? And that's one nice thing about solving this economic problems. You're going to see a return to decent interest rates, which is going to help the older generation. Look at the bottom. Amount of contributions per year into retirement account. Example, assume you invest $2,000 per year into a tax-sheltered retirement plan until you're 65. Start at age 40. Say you get an 8% annual return. Like, you won't do it today, but over your lifetime, that should happen. From age 40 to age 65, that's 25 years, you're going to put $50,000 into a retirement plan. It'll turn into $169,000 25 years later. If you need double that, you put $4,000 a year into a pension plan. If you do a match, that $4,000 could become $8,000. It's unbelievable how that accumulates. It's discipline. It takes discipline. It's doable. Go back to page 2. Number 7, have a retirement plan in progress of Proverbs 13:16 again. Proverbs 13:16. Dishonest money doing his way, but he who got his money little by little makes it grow. Number 8. Own your home debt-free by the time you retire. My wife and I's financial plan says we're going to have our home paid for by the time I hit age 54. That was our goal. Folks, we're creatures of habit. If you say I'm going to go to church every Sunday morning, you'll go. If you say I'm going to put $2,000 a year, $4,000 a year into my retirement plan, that's your goal, you'll do it. If you say I'm going to live by a budget, you'll do it. We're creatures of habit. If you say, I'm going to structure a deal where I have my home paid off by such and such an age, chances are you'll do it. If you have a target, chances are much greater you'll hit it than if you don't have a target. Because you put it into your thought process.
Number 9, have a workable budget. Oh boy, there he goes again, budgeting. Yeah, you better believe it. Proverbs 24:3-4.
Proverbs 24:3-4, paraphrase, says, any enterprise is built by wise planning, becomes strong through common sense, and profits wonderfully by keeping abreast of the facts. That's a paraphrase. Turn to page 6 and 7. The budget issue. Folks, I have done this little worksheet for 53 years of marriage. That was part of our financial plan. We're going to have a budget. This is simple. Left-hand column, the categories where you spend money. The top of the column are the months of the year. Round it off to the nearest dollar. Don't go to cents. Get rid of cents. Just round it off. Keep track of the money where it goes every month by category. You know, when someone says to you, I don't know where my money goes, you know what they're admitting? They're poor stewards. Stewardship says, I know where my money goes and when it goes there. That's stewardship. We don't own our resources. It's only been loaned to us by God to serve Him with and to enjoy. You do this little worksheet for 3 consecutive months. I'll guarantee you by the 4th month you begin to commit it to memory. We're creatures of habit. If my wife was here, you could take her outside and ask us questions independent of each other that we couldn't hear their answers. How much money's in the checkbook? My wife could tell you, I could tell you. What paychecks are yet to come in this month? She could tell you, I could tell you. What bills are yet to be paid this month? I can tell you in detail. I can tell you what bills are due next month. Well, it's Christmas. That's a little tougher. But I can tell you that. She could come close. If she doesn't remember, she goes to the worksheet. Folks, we know our cash flow. We know where our money goes and when it goes there. Our biggest monthly cash outgo is October. Every year, it's October. Why October? We pay our annual property tax bill in October because I want to deduct it on my tax return. So we pay all of 17 taxes in 16 October. That's when we did it. I wrote the check. My annual car insurance, I paid in October. I paid annually because it's a little cheaper. My premium for my life insurance, October. So I know October's a bit. This is November. I know October's coming. And it's 11 months down the road. Doesn't surprise us. We know it's coming. That's what this does for you. It tells you where your money goes and when it's going there. You know, I had the same worksheet for the foundation. I know the cash flow of the foundation. My wife and I know our cash flow independent of each other. We know when we can spend more money on a motel. We know when we can rent a nicer car. We know when we can do some things for the grandkids, give more to the Lord's work, because we know our cash flow. We've got this buffer. Folks, this buffer is what gives you the freedom to serve the Lord. Why would a believer today who wants to honor Christ be controlled by credit card debt? That just doesn't make sense. I'm not opinionated, by the way. Okay. So have a budget. Go to page 3. Key principles to think about. Less than 30% of credit card holders pay off the entire balance each month. Less than 30%. Family who uses credit cards for all their purchases can spend 30-40% more than those who pay with cash. Easiest time to spend money is with a credit card. Next easiest time is write a check. Most difficult time for most people to spend money is when they part with cash. Because you see that money going right out to wherever you're spending the money. Now, let me tell you something else. About a year and a half ago, I had a meeting with the executives down in Los Angeles, Bank of America executives. Went to their conference. I know them well because of all the stuff, the college and my foundation, all that. So I know them. So I asked for a meeting with them. So we got together in a conference room. There were 7 of them. I said, I want to talk about just one subject. Credit cards versus debit cards. Talk to me. Here's what they said. Not one of those 7, not one, used their debit cards for anything but getting cash out of their checking account. Not a one. And they don't use ATM machines that are not located at their branch. That's where the fraud's at. And I said, give me your number one reason. I figured what it was, but I wanted to hear it from them. These are the executives. They said, debit cards are tied directly to your checking account. And if there's fraud and somebody gets access to your number and your PIN number, which they can do today, they have access to your checking account. Credit cards don't have access to your checking account. They only have access to the limit of your credit card. And you're protected there by the credit card company. Unbelievable. Not one of the 7 used their debit cards for purchases. Not a one. What does that tell you? This is the Bank of America executives. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What a lesson. I have a Citibank credit card. I have one credit card. It's a Citibank. I've had it for years. It's an American Airlines Advantage. I usually fly American because I like American. John's trying to sell me on, what is it? Virgin America. I just flew up here on Virgin America. They took me by way of Denver. No, they didn't. They took me right up here. For every dollar I charge in this card, I get a point. For every airplane ticket I buy with this credit card over the internet, I get a point for every mile I fly, round trip. For every 25,000 points, I get a free coach ticket wherever American flies. My wife and I get 5 to 7 free tickets a year off this credit card. It costs me $35 a year. Citibank calls me a moocher. They call me a moocher. They don't give me any interest. I pay no interest on this credit card debt. We get the bill, we pay the bill. We don't think we can pay the bill when we put the charge on the credit card. Credit card stays in our wallet. We don't use it. Very simple. So the headquarters for Citibank out here, one of the headquarters, is the Lakes, Nevada. That's where I pay my bill. So when I fly out of Burbank or LAX and I fly over to Las Vegas, I wave out the window and thank them for their free ticket. How's that? My billing cycle starts the 23rd of the month and ends the 22nd of the following month. So my billing cycle will end the 22nd of November and starts over on the 23rd. The 23rd, I print out my credit card statement. And I pay it the 24th or 25th. It's due, it will be due December 12th. So my billing cycle started the 23rd of October. So all the charges I put on my credit card from October 23rd to December to November 22nd, free interest. Free interest. And I have till December 12th to pay the bill. Let's say I owe $3,001. And I'm in a hurry. So I write a check for $3,000 and send it to Citibank. They credit my account. And on December 13th, I still owe a dollar. What happens? I pay a late fee on the whole amount, and I can pay interest on all those charges. Let's say I write a check for $3,001, and I mail it on the 10th of December. It doesn't get to Citibank until the 13th of December. I'm late. I pay a late fee, and I pay interest on all those charges. That's how it works. So I pay my bill. I pay my bill. I print it out on the 23rd. I pay my bill by the 25th. And then I check to make sure it clears the bank, because I don't want to take any chances of getting lost in the mail and me getting nailed with a charge. That's how you do that. That's how you do that. Folks, it's a great tool. This is a wonderful tool, or a terrible master. For most people, it's a terrible master because they don't know how to handle it. They mishandle it. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Go back to page 3. Of people with financial problems, 60% have borrowed more money than they can realistically repay during their lifetime. 40% have borrowed more money than they can even make payments on. We will never handle anything less significant than money, nor more outwardly indicative of our inward spiritual condition. That's Matthew 6:21. Children today want their living standard to start or even be superior to that enjoyed by their parents. They're taught that. The motto is, I want what I want. I want it now. I'm even willing to go into debt to get what I want now, because they watch how our country functions. It's not the high cost of living that gets us, but living high. Listen, look at this statement. It's not how much you make. It's how well you want to live. And every one of us, including me, needs to look in that mirror every once in a while and say, do I need all this stuff? Do I need all these toys? You live in the Northwest, people. This is a 12-month playground. You don't have to look very far to have fun. Work across the street. Unbelievable up here. Southern California, you can't get through the traffic to get anywhere. You got traffic up here, too. Listen to this one. John and I were talking about this yesterday. 85% of divorces, biblical counselors tell me, and 85% of divorces among believers, the reason has something to do with money. I was telling John, I was counseling a young couple from Grace Church the last few months. The guy's name is Tom. Comes to my office. Come to the third session. Brings his wife. I could tell I wasn't getting through. He's unbelievably upside down. Out of control. Out of toys, every toy imaginable. Every toy imaginable. Sitting in my office. I can tell I'm not getting through. But he did come for the third session. So he brings his wife, 3 kids, they're out in the lobby of our foundation, and one is a little 3-year-old. And I looked at him and I said, Tom, I want you to listen to me. It's called tough love. I want you to listen to me. I said, Tom, you love your wife?
Yeah.
You love your kids?
Yeah.
Scale of 1 to 10, how much you love your wife? Oh, it's a 12. How much you love your kids? I said, it's a 12. Listen to me, Buster. I pointed to her and said, you're going to lose her. You are playing with dynamite. You are going to lose her. 3-year-old started crying. So she leaves the room. Takes a 3-year-old outside. I said to him, I said, Tom, did you look at her? Did you notice her when I said what I said? Yeah, he said, I did. I said, it's there, Tom. I'm telling you. You're playing with dynamite. Tom, when she crosses that line, you may never get her back. You better wake up, Buster, and you better wake up now. You are playing with dynamite. And if you're willing, I'll show you how to do it. That was, what, a month and a half ago, I think I told you? I haven't heard from him. I don't know what he's going to do. Pretty sad. Pretty sad. Whenever you value something too much, whatever happens to it, happens to you. Car breaks down, you break down. There's a difference. I define debt a little bit different than most people. I put debt into two categories. One is a delinquent financial obligation, and one is an obligation, money borrowed and paid according to your agreement. Borrowing money to buy a home is not bad debt. That should be good debt. You're buying an asset that's appreciating, Lord willing. You make your monthly mortgage payment. If you can't make your monthly mortgage payment, you had no business borrowing that money in the first place. Bad debt is credit card debt. Credit card debt that goes beyond the grace period where you're paying interest is bad debt. You're paying interest on food you've eaten, clothes you've worn, trips you've taken. That's incredible. That's incredible. Most people I counsel with have unbelievable credit card debt. Out of control, and most of it's unnecessary. Most of it's unnecessary. Two early attitudes of retiring money. Keep God out of things. My ego is supreme and should rule. Go back to your first page. No. Go to page 3. You don't have a page 3. Okay. Yeah. Page 4. Let me tell you, show some more statistics on credit card debt. There's 800 million credit cards in service today. 200 million are used every day. There will be 200 million credit cards used in the 50 states today. Different credit cards. Over $2 trillion per year are being charged on credit cards today. Per year. $2 trillion. 2014, 2015, and from what I read, 2016 is on track. Presently, as I'm talking to you this morning, there's over $800 billion at interest on debt, credit card debt. $800 billion. Of those people that owe credit card debt, the average interest rate is 17%. Well, you say, I can borrow money on a credit card for 0%. I can roll my credit cards, yes, for a short period of time. But miss a payment. Miss two payments. So what happens to your interest rate? It won't take long to get it into the 20s, 20 percentile. So the average is 17% on people who are paying interest on credit card debt. 800 billion times 17% divided by 365 days will tell you that the average credit card company makes $373 of interest income per day on credit card debt. Interest only. It's a cash cow. It's a cash cow. I spoke at Master's Chapel, and I used those statistics, and they told me the discussion in the dormitories after my chapel message was, what's a cash cow? They didn't have a clue. Average number of credit cards per household that has credit card issues? 6. I took a friend of mine to lunch a while back. You know him very well. Know his name. And he said, no, I don't believe 6. Maybe 3 or 4. I said, get out your wallet. He had 11 credit cards in his wallet. I said, you will never live that down. Never, never, never. Right, John? No, it wasn't John. 60% carry their unpaid balances from month to month. Credit card industry won't tell you this, but once they get you $800 in debt, their statistics tell them they have you for life. Once they give you, these statistics aren't in your handout. Once they get you, their statistics say once they get someone $800 in debt, past the grace period, paying interest, they probably have them for the rest of their life. That's what their statistics tell them. Go to page 4. Page 4. Learn to be content. 1 Timothy 6. You'll hear this Sunday morning. Generosity, contentment, and integrity. If I'm generous, it's because I'm content. I'm content with where God has me. I'm content in the good times. I'm content in the bad times because I know God is sovereign. I know God has a purpose for everything in my life. And sometimes He's going to take me through some tough times to teach me a lesson. And I may not ever know His purpose, but there's a purpose. God's sovereign. Number two, give God a chance first. Psalm 37:7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. I already mentioned that. Commit it to the Lord. We're all created with an emotion. That's probably our created being. Learn to control your emotions, particularly in how we spend money. Listen, like I said earlier, if this isn't right today, it's right tomorrow. It's right today, it's right next month. Don't be rushing to something that you're not prepared to do. Walk away from it. You know, there's something else. There's no such thing as a dumb question. There's only dumb answers. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I'm in a fast food restaurant not too long ago. Two guys sitting across the little break from me. I said they were talking about car insurance. This guy telling this guy about this great car insurance deal he got. I pick up my hamburger and when I walked over and I introduced myself and I sat down and I said, "Tell me about your car insurance deal." And they laughed. And so he told me about his car. Hey, I'm not bashful. Ask the question. Number three, avoid hasty speculation. Stick with what you know. If you don't understand it, ask questions or walk away from it. Walk away from it. Evaluate every purchase you make. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Can you afford it? Is it the best buy? Can you really use it? Have you shopped for it? Is it a need, a want, or desire? A need is I need a car. I want a Cadillac. I desire a Mercedes. It's like the guy walked up to his group of buddies, sticks out his chest and says, "I have a house full of furniture from France. It goes all the way back to Louis XIV. Other guy says, "That's nothing. I've got a house full of furniture from Sears. It's going back on the 15th. A little reality, right? Number five, do not cosign. Five times in Proverbs we're warned about being a cosigner, about striking hands, about being surety for someone else's debt. Why would you guarantee somebody's debt who's already in trouble? They wouldn't need your co-signature. That's ludicrous. Now, I get the question. When you read those passages talking about non-blood relatives, neighbors and friends, those are non-blood relatives. Would I co-sign for my son? Yes, on certain circumstances. He graduates from college. He gets a job. He needs a car. He doesn't have any money. He doesn't have any credit. I would say, sure, I'll co-sign for you. You need to learn that you borrow some money, you need to pay it back. It's going to be a lesson for him. He's come to my seminars. If he reneges on his payments, I wring his little neck. But that's a lesson for him to learn. Be careful about co-signing notes. Beware. Beware. Number six, don't be deceitful. Contrary to popular thinking, we can be both successful and honest today, totally open and totally honest. We saw that in this election today. My this year. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Corruption and deceit. Unbelievable. What in the world have we come to in this country?